Welcome to another episode of the Wheelchair Roundtable, where real people share real stories. We're coming to you from Town Place Suites by Marriott McAllen Edinburgh Studio, located right here in the Rio Grande Valley, the front line of the USA. I'm Rico ATP, and riding shotgun is Mr. Did he just say that?
I may have.
Roland Reyes, and rounding out the crew is the Quad Father, with just two ATPs in a quad, with a microphone and a mission and a whole lot of passion. This podcast is about real people, real stories, and real power. Spotlighting life after injury, adaptive technology, and the voices reshaping what it means to roll forward. So buckle up, because at this roundtable, we're not just talking, we're building a movement. How is everybody doing?
Doing well.
You're doing well, Danny?
Good. The weather's got me pumped.
Oh, well, it's like, what, 60 degrees?
It is perfect weather for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
67 degrees, perfect.
Yeah.
Any colder, then I'm screwed.
Really?
Spasms are going to, yeah, no.
Yeah, good. I'm glad to hear that.
You know, it's only going to be like this like for 2 days, bro. It'll be freaking hot again.
It's our two-day winter.
There we go. Roland, you?
I'm doing well.
So you were out for a while, remember?
I was out for a while.
Tell us about that.
I was in the hospital, had a viral infection, lungs and heart, but I'm good to go today.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Tell us about that. We got some people you want to recognize over at the hospital, right?
Sure, I sure do. The ER staff for taking care of me when I first got there. My nurses, Jesus, Mary, Viviana, Jennifer, all the PTs, respiratory therapists, and Sam. So I want to thank everybody. They took great care of me. I'm good to go. About 95% of the way back, I feel pretty good.
Well, you look great, man.
Thanks.
And then I was calling you and texting you. I went to go see you in the hospital, and I was like, what the hell's going on?
You and another one of my friends kind of looked out after me.
Yeah, we'll take care
of you. But I'm back, and I feel pretty good.
Yeah, you look good. We're glad to have you back, man.
I did lose about 8 pounds, but I put them back on.
You found them?
I found them over the weekend.
Yeah, they're with the food.
Yeah.
Danny?
Chilling. I mean, just work, and then more work, man. Right now, I've been killing my students. Test after exam, after midterm, after lab exam, after lab.
Why, are you trying to be an ass or what?
No, it's just I got to go by what the school has lined up for us, and I got to finish. It's basically a chapter a week. So this semester, we're doing 15 chapters.
You got to be kidding me.
No, dude, it's no joke.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's a college class, so whatever STC has on their curriculum, I got to knock out those 15.
It's like one a month, right? More or less.
So exams? There's four.
I mean, one a week, I'm sorry.
Four exams. Yeah, one chapter a week. Lecture exams and one final exam, and then throw two lab exams in there, plus whatever quizzes and assignments I have them.
And how many students do you get?
I have about 50, a little over 50 students, just for the college class. But and then I've got another class. It's called Teen Leadership. It's just a bunch of football players.
So you have to grade all 50
tests. If I'm smart about it, I can use the software to do it for me, but it's just setting it up. Like, setting it up takes a while, but once it's set up properly, then I can have it go, right? Like, it can just grade for me. But it's all the extra assignments that I give outside. Like, we do a bunch of case studies or lab reports and things like that that I have to grade. Yeah.
That's freaking awesome, man.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But so,
aside from that, good times. Yeah. Ready for Halloween.
There was this guy, this when I pulled up to Marriott, he was parked in your spot, the handicap spot?
Yeah, I had to park.
Wait, he was still down there?
There was no handicap parking. On the sides there were, but...
Well, where you park?
Parked here on the front, off to the side, but over a little bit further down where nobody's going to park next to me.
Well, I called Edinburgh PD.
You snitching, dude?
Hell yes. Because he didn't have a handicap sticker, handicap license plates.
Yeah.
So I don't play with that. So.
Morally, I'm...
Well, here at Marriott, it's awesome because... it's all cement, so it's not like it's real smooth for me, and I don't have to go very far.
That's not the point, Danny.
Yeah, no, I know, but it's just, at least they have it set up in case we've got people.
I used to have these like little papers with Mickey Mouse throwing the finger.
Yeah.
And I used to stick it on people's, I think I'm going to go back to that. So this is Halloween week.
Vigilante.
Hell yeah, brother. Y'all having a favorite horror movie growing up?
Growing up,
it's a great pumpkin, Charlie Brown. That's I told you before pre-show. That's kind of me.
Yeah,
big, not really.
But the pumpkin patch and stuff.
Yeah,
you're not into scary movies.
I really ain't. None. I really am not.
None.
No, dude.
You've never seen one?
They don't interest me. They don't scare me or interest me.
Oh, that's kind of scary.
Yeah,
it's scary that the fact it don't scare you.
I'm kind of based in reality, kind of with that. So I look at it as it's happening, and I'm not scared because I'm in my living room. Or in my bedroom, wherever.
under the sheets.
Somewhere.
You, Dan?
I like the old school Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers,
yeah,
Jason, school. You know. Recently, I mean, what were we saying, Get Out or Us or Smile or all those movies are pretty good.
Yeah, I've seen those.
They're a little twisted. I like them. But yeah, the old stuff, I like the old stuff.
Who's the dude in the truck? Was that Texas Chainsaw Massacre? The dude chasing the kids in the truck?
Oh, that was Jeepers Creepers. That's a great
that was
the
all
first
right.
one. The first
that
one
was all right. I'll pick that one.
Okay, you'll go with that one?
Yeah, instead of Charlie Brown. Let's scratch Charlie for now. Yeah.
Well, according to our artificial intelligence, it has the top 7 characters. So let me see if you all agree. So coming in at number 7 is Norman Bates from Psycho.
Yeah, Mother.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that dude. Okay, coming in at number 6, Pinhead, Hellraiser. How long would it take all the makeup to put that stuff on?
I don't know, but there's a lot of help. A lot of those movies.
Do you think all those pins were lined up straight?
I'm sure he had, I don't know if it was a mask or some sort of makeup that they put those things on, but
they were kind of stupid towards the end. Number 5 is Leatherface, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Was that a real thing?
I think it was.
That's according to
true
stories.
Story. Based on.
Based on some true stories. They never found the guy, but yeah, based on true stories.
Yeah. Okay, number 4 is Chucky, Child's Play.
Yeah, I like Chucky, dude.
Chucky branched out and got himself a bride, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Chucky was a pimp, dude. He was able to pick up real women.
It was just funny, dude.
Yeah.
Why did they just kick him?
Because he would come back at you with a knife and
yeah,
keep stabbing you.
Knives.
Like, he can't feel pain. The dude is a walking quadriplegic. He doesn't feel pain, but he can walk, bro.
Walking quadriplegic.
He can feel pain. Like he can't feel pain. Yeah. He just can't feel pain.
Well,
I don't. I said that. I
learned that today, that Chucky the quad. Okay, number 3 is Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, everybody knows
yours,
that.
Danny.
Jason.
That's your
boy.
Dude.
Yeah,
that's
I like.
Guy.
Well, I like Michael Myers more, but yeah, Jason's up there, top 3.
Jamie Lee Curtis in there.
Yeah, and she came back in the latest one.
You remember, there was a bunch. There was the original,
right?
And then there was a bunch of kind of, but when they made the last two, they said all of those had nothing to do with the original.
Yeah.
And so when they made the new one with Jamie Lee Curtis,
uh-huh.
It was years later from the original one.
Yeah. She was a hottie when I was young.
Agreed.
Yeah.
You got to see her in The Bear. That's a great show.
Oh, I have.
Great show.
Yeah.
Huh. But Jason Voorhees was based in a lake, right? He drowned, his parents drowned or something?
Yeah.
Kind of like the white Llorona. Dude, the Llorona's not even on this damn list. That's
but
like
I am looking forward to Halloween. I'm going to take my grandbabies out trick-or-treating because my son has to be somewhere late. I'm going to kind of fill his role, his job.
You get to do that today, buddy. It's an opportunity. All right, number 2 is Freddy Krueger.
Freddy.
Of course.
Didn't they have that movie, Jason versus Freddy?
Yeah. You can't beat Freddy because he's in their dreams. How do you beat the guy?
That's not fair.
I mean, if I remember correctly, I think he won.
He always wins.
Yeah.
Freddy's got a good stand-up game for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cuts you up.
Yeah.
But like, the look. Yeah. It's classic.
Yeah.
That red and black sweater. And that hat?
Yeah.
Tom Landry hat?
You know it right away.
Tom Landry. Yeah.
It was Tom Landry's. And number 1 is Michael Myers.
Yeah.
That damn iconic song.
Yeah. Just that white face. You don't know what's going on behind that mask.
There was a dude in my neighborhood where I used to live, in your old neighborhood as well.
Really?
So, yeah, in the North McAllen, who used to dress up in the in that outfit and with a knife. With a knife. And dude, he was like pretty threatening, you know, like I was always just like looking out for him because he'd go out in the middle of the street and walk towards you or to your family or whatever. I was always on it, dude. It's I'm watching this guy. Y'all do your thing.
I'm
right.
Choke
everybody.
Him out.
Yeah. I'll do something.
Yeah. Okay. Real. And some iconic monsters. You have the Invisible Man. That would be very interesting. The Werewolf, the Mummy, Frankenstein's Monster, and Dracula. All right. Well, we got a special guest today, Roland. You want me to tell me about him?
Yep. Armando Ramirez, he was a 18-year-old guy, was shot in a senseless drive-by that changed his life forever. On July 16th of 2022, he was struck by a bullet that left him paralyzed at the T9, T10 level, his spinal cord, with internal injuries and a broken right arm. His heart stopped for about 12 minutes, yet somehow he survived. Before the shooting, Armando had a bright future working in aviation bodywork, passionate about cars and craftsmanship. His best friend saved his life that night by performing CPR before medics arrived. He spent 2 months at Aurora Medical Center before being transferred to Craig Hospital, where he became the first patient accepted from Aurora in 4 years, a miracle in and of itself. At Craig, Armando began intense rehab, first utilizing a power wheelchair and later conquering the ramp in a manual chair. A symbolic victory for his determination, he found peace in the hospital's garden, drawing strength from nature and reflection. Once discharged, Armando faced his new reality head on. His first real test came when he painted the front grille of his girlfriend's car, proof that he could still create, still work, still be himself. That moment ignited a new purpose. Today, Armando is a licensed real estate agent, navigating homes and open houses in his wheelchair with courage and resourcefulness. He's faced heartbreak, setbacks, and moments of doubt, but continues to rise, rebuild, and inspire others by showing what true resilience looks like. Armando?
Welcome to the show, Armando. How are you?
Good, good, and you?
We're doing pretty good, man. Thank you for coming on the show. We're really excited for you to tell your story.
Yeah.
Yeah, but before I get there, man, what's your favorite Halloween movie?
You know, it's going to be Michael Myers.
Michael Myers wins.
Yeah.
Hey, what's it like there in Colorado, man? It probably looks really nice with all the different changes of the leaves.
Yeah, and you know, it's changing colors now. You know, it's the cold's coming. Not my favorite, but...
Yeah, that's what Danny was saying.
You'd probably trade your cold weather for our hot weather. You probably wouldn't, is my thought. It'll go like 90 straight days at 100 degrees here.
Easy.
Oh, easy.
Easy, brother. We're a different type of brown. We got UV skin. All right, Armando, so we want you to share your story with us, you know, and on our pre-show call, it's very inspiring, you know, what you've overcome at such a young age. And I know we have some young age listeners who right now are dealing with an injury or disability. And this is your opportunity to share with them how you overcame this tragic incident that happened to you. So tell us your story, Armando.
So yeah, I was, you know, an 18-year-old just doing 18-year-old things. I went to a technical college to study collision repair. And you know, I really liked it, was getting more into it. I graduated. Or when I was in school, I started my business in collision repair, and it was going really good. And you know, it was time to like really, really step up in my life, to expand my business more, to hire workers, get into another building, because I was doing everything out of my mom's garage. That month, July, I believe I was going to make 9,000, revenue.
And nice. Then
it was picking up, you know. The last month in June, I was making, I think it was like seven and a half.
And you were making this at what age?
18.
Wow.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
18, yeah. So then, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I had three options before my accident. It was either expand my business. They offered me a job to paint private jets at Pilates or to do real estate. And like myself, I love to travel. I love just going to different places, and I just love planes, you know, just how big they are, how crazy they work and stuff like that. So I went to the interview at the Pilates, and then, you know, just seeing those planes, seeing what they do, seeing how big they are, you know, I told myself, yeah, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. This is going to be good. And I think I was going to be starting at 90,000 a year.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And you know, it was good, you know. And I took the job. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, you know, it's a big step for me. In the long run, it would have been better if I would have, you know, in my business and stuff like that. But I think that moment which just really got me was just being able to work on the planes and stuff like that, you know. So then, yeah, you know, and then I already had a pre-approval to get into a townhome. I was going to buy it, rent it out, you know, stuff like that. And I was doing all this at 18.
Yeah, you were ahead of the game, bro.
And, you know, it was one of those nights where, I mean, I don't even go out like that. But, you know, they invited me to go out. And, you know, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I don't really go out. It was a Saturday day. I worked at my other job. You know, I got home. I got ready. And that night is when I got shot.
And that was what, July 16th, 2022?
Yeah, July 16th. No, 2023.
2023.
What led up to the shooting?
So I guess it was some uninvited guest that came in. I guess the ad just got leaked, and people showed up that were not supposed to show up. So we told them to leave, and I mean, that's all I remember. My homie, my best friend, he was saying that there was like a fight or something, and the next thing I know is I wake up at the hospital.
So you didn't even know you'd been shot.
Yeah, I didn't even know I'd been shot. I don't remember nothing. I mean, the last thing I remember was just I was in the backyard, and that's about it.
And you said it was a drive-by shooting?
It was a drive-by.
Yeah, they still haven't found the guy, huh?
So they came back and shot.
Yeah, seems like that was the case. Yeah.
Where were you shot at exactly on your body?
It went through my arm, my chest, and it came on my...
Well, when somebody experiences that kind of trauma, what's going on? As far as pushing the muscles that come into the arm?
It just depends, but it sounds like really traumatic. Really traumatic. Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember when I got shot. Like, it's like now... Like this day, a couple of weeks ago, you know, like I'm starting to have like dreams about it, you know, not crazy, like exact moments when I got shot, but like if my body feels shot, you know, like when you guys, like with those pins that shock you, like the jokes or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I felt in my dream was something like that, but like 10 times worse, like about my body.
You may have been in and out without knowing. Maybe your body went to shock and you don't remember anything because you're maybe like going in and out, and then... If it went through your lung, maybe his lung collapse or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
So upon, you know, once you were kind of fully aware, what did you feel? I'm sure you were paralyzed from the chest down, but what exactly was your thought process as you're discovering this or figuring this out? What were you thinking?
So, yeah, I mean, I wake up. I have like these tubes in my mouth to be able to help me breathe. And I wake up. The first thing I wake up to is... my parents on their knees, they're crying. I see all these, you know, I see my friends by the door in the ICU. And I remember, you know, my mom was telling me that there was a lot of people at the hospital and they just tried to push them out, but they were going to kick everybody out from the hospital. And it was hard. And doctors come in and tells me, you know, Armando, you've been shot. You hit your spinal cord. You're never going to be able to walk. You're never going to be able to stand or anything like that. So don't try to look on YouTube about miracles and stuff like that, you know. And that's like the first thing he told me.
Dude. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm going to stand. What was that kind of emotion like? Like, I'm sure being told by your doctor, like, don't do this or don't expect this. How did you or your family take that?
Good question, Danny.
My dad, he did take it pretty hard because, I mean, I get it, you know, they're doing their job, telling us the truth, you know, but to tell us the truth like that was really what got me thinking when I started knowing where I was at, knowing what was happening. I don't think it was necessary for him to say, like, what he said.
And by the way, you're at the hospital, you had mentioned you had, your heart had stopped for 12 minutes.
Yeah, so I was pronounced dead at the hospital. They had to cut me open armpit to armpit to play with my heart and to take out the liquid from my lungs.
Do you remember anything during that time?
I mean, la verdad, I don't remember nothing. You know, the only thing I just wake up to is the doctors telling me that and all the people that were there.
So as you're coming to you in the hospital bed, you've got a trach. Is that correct?
It sounds like he was intubated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he said out of his mouth.
So you had mentioned also at this point you're healing, but you were also on some pretty hard painkillers, right?
Yeah, so I was only on some painkillers for maybe like a week and a half because, like, to me at least, I mean, painkillers really make me hallucinate. You know, it wasn't... After 2 weeks, I didn't take any pain medication, or the only thing I took was just Tylenol.
Yeah.
What kind of weird dreams were you having?
I remember it was just like, I woke up, I was hot. I just see if the lights were getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And I tried to ask for help, and like people were just passing by, and it was just like some crazy shit. I mean, it was just like, it was just like a lot of people passing by, you know, and I tried to raise my hand to get help and nobody came. Like the people who were walking by, they looked at me, but they didn't come. And I was like, what's happening, you know?
It's one of those common things that we keep hearing about people that are given drugs, and it's just all these twisted things that we see or feel or experience. We can have just a whole podcast on just people and on the trips that they get from pain meds. But I think me initially, it was about the same amount, about a week and a half. I think they just do it as precaution because you don't know your body. You don't feel normal.
Right.
But in Armando's case, like his from the chest down and it was his arm. So how was your arm feeling at that time? Could you, like, was that very painful, your arm? Because I'd imagine that was probably the thing that hurt you the most, that or having to breathe.
Yeah. So, I mean, when they took out the tubes, I was scared because I didn't know how to breathe. Yeah, like, if that makes sense, you know, they took it out and I was like, I can't breathe. And I think, I don't know, it was just crazy, but my arm was the most, my arm and my chest where I had the open wound and the chest tubes I had in. I had two chest tubes on each side of my rib cage.
Yeah, if they had that opening, they had to really drain that extra sac that's around your lungs. Because that, I think if that sac around your lungs is the one that tears, then that's when you get a collapsed lung. Because that's the one that creates like that back pressure into your lungs or something like that. Yeah. I don't remember my anatomy very well, but when that happens, your lung just closes in on itself. Yeah. So
you think that's why he had some fluid in his lungs?
Well, yeah. So all that blood and anything, because if it went through his lung, that thing is leaking, right? Yeah. So
I mean, it's trauma.
Yeah, and it's they have to open it up and just let it leak out so there's no pressure, because it's like anything. If you got a balloon and you're putting pressure on it, you're not gonna be able to fill it up, and he's not able to breathe. So they have to get all that liquid out. Yeah.
Do you think there's anything that connects the spinal cord injury with these weird dreams with narcotic medication?
Well, I was going to ask, like, I wonder if any other person that's going through any sort of trauma just in general is experiencing these types of things as well. Because if it's specific to spinal cord injuries, then yeah. But I'm assuming if there's trauma, like any hardcore medicine.
I'd almost say so, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be the same thing for everyone.
Yeah.
I think
it's more the drug than the condition.
You think so?
I would guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
Definitely. Because
I'm not a professional, but we're just...
And we all... It's kind of like, I don't know, what was it that you were on? For me, it was morphine. Do you know what it was that you were on, Armando?
It was morphine as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Armando, you spent 2 months at Aurora Medical Center. You tell us... So, you're talking about, like, after a week, you know, you're up. How long was it before they sat you up, put you in a wheelchair, and had you moving around or started therapy there? I'm curious to know how quickly that progressed and what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, so, you know, I remember it was, I think it was like 3 weeks since if they would put me in a chair. Not like a manual chair, power chair, but like someone would push me chair. You know, they would have to carry me onto that chair to be able to, because I just didn't want to be in the room anymore.
Right.
I wanted to go outside just to get some fresh air. You know, it was, Those times could be rough, you know, but at least getting some air, getting some sun, it did really help, you know, in my opinion.
Do you have any skin integrity issues or like the cubitus ulcers or any breakdown on your bottom or coccyx area at that point?
I was going to get like a pressure sore like next to my hip.
Okay.
But they did catch that on, and we did figure that out, like not to happen and stuff like that.
What were you thinking during the, you know, once they got you up and you're moving around in these manual wheelchair and in the power wheelchair, tell us about mentally where you were at that point and what you were thinking at that point.
You know, it was pretty hard to believe because I mean, everything was going so good for me and, you know, my life changed within seconds, you know. So I was really quiet. The first weeks, I tried not to be, but I mean, it was something hard to take in, you know, really changed my life. But I mean, it's just the way you think about it, you know, we have these opportunities to make the changes, you know, and we're the only ones who could be able to make those changes in life, you know.
Yeah, well, correct. Edwin, at this point, are you still at Aurora or are you already going to Craig?
I'm still in Aurora. Okay. When I was going outside,
a wheel through that in Aurora. Pretty quick. That's pretty fast.
Yeah, for me, when I was at Denver Health, it was about 4 weeks after I got hurt till I finally got to go outside. Yeah, it was a while for me. Yours was pretty quick, but he's right. Like when you're able to go outside for that first time, oh, just to feel that sunlight on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It changes something about you.
Yeah.
They just feel better.
Dude, I only spent 4 days in the hospital, but on the fourth day, the day I was getting discharged,
yeah,
I was so jazzed up. So jazzed up, dude, that my blood pressure shot up. I was wearing a hoodie. I was wearing some loose shorts, baggy shorts. I still had the IV on me, and I know what you must have felt like. And my experience was so limited, but the desperation for me to want to leave that I actually started box breathing, which is, I don't know if you guys are familiar with box breathing, but I said, I need to calm down, get my heart rate down and get that blood pressure back down because they weren't going to let me go.
Did it to yourself, man.
I got it down and Jennifer came and she was the nurse. She came and took my blood pressure. It said the magic number, the magic cutoff, that's where it was. She just snatched the thing out of my arm and went and finished the paperwork. Armando, I know, 4 days drove me crazy.
Can I imagine?
I can't even imagine what you guys have been through.
Well, you said you were the first person from Aurora accepted to Craig in 4 years?
That's what the nurses and doctors told me.
Wow, that's amazing. And how far of a drive? Well, how far is it from Aurora to Craig?
I would say like 30 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So you got to that. So where is Aurora then? Because I know...
In relation, yeah.
Yeah, because Englewood is where Craig is at. Englewood is right south of Denver, right? But where's Aurora? I don't remember.
Aurora's almost like, you know where Parker would be at?
Okay, yeah.
No clue.
Like around there, over there.
I think it's west, right?
Yeah.
It's on the west side, yeah. Yeah.
It's in western Colorado.
At that point, because you're getting ready, how long were you at Aurora before you got sent to Craig?
I was there for 2 months.
2 months.
2 months, okay.
2 months, and then they discharged me to Craig Hospital.
What did they tell you? I guess at some point they started to tell you about Craig, right? What were they saying at that point?
They were telling me, you know, we're going to send you here because it's going to help you through, you know, throughout this process, you know, because I mean, to me back then, I was thinking, what the fuck's going to happen? You know, what's going to happen next? Are they just going to put me in a wheelchair and let me go through all my days? Or, you know, it was just stuff like that. And I was thinking, you know, and that's when they were talking about us, about Craig.
And how were you mentally at this point? Because you're getting ready for a change. Like at this point, what was your thought process? What am I going to do? What's going on? Like, what are you thinking at that point?
What I was thinking, my days were getting a little bit more better mentally wise as well, because I had like a resource to be able to be like, okay, yes, if I, you know, if I could do this, I could accomplish this, or, you know, this is something that I could start with,
right,
and see where it goes. It takes me, you know.
And at that point, 2 months later, how was your right arm? Because I know you and I know Craig, and you're getting ready for a chinga, right? You're getting ready for a fight there. How was your, like, physically for your arm, right? What could you or couldn't you do at that point? Like, was your arm okay? Were you able to move it around a bit? What could you do with it?
Yeah, so it was like really swollen still, but the doctors did tell me not to put any weight on it, to just really do nothing with it. And I mean, that's what I did. When I got to to Craig, that's when they put me in a wheelchair. I mean, excuse me, an electric wheelchair, power chair.
Do you remember what power chair they put you in? Do you remember the particular chair that you were in?
Mm-hmm. I just remember it had a golf ball for the joy stick.
Oh, okay. How was your hand function at that time, or that golf ball just happened to be on it?
No, it just happened to be on it.
Okay. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
I think for Craig, usually from what I remember, pretty standard was your first chair was going to be a power chair no matter what. At least that's what I remember. There may have been one or two that didn't. They were just really strong. But for the most part, I think they start everyone on a power chair.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So Armando, tell us about your first week there, Craig. Tell us what it was like.
Yeah, it was a, you know, good experience. There was doctors. I was meeting new doctors, meeting new nurses, and just seeing other people in wheelchairs, hearing their story.
Did that kind of motivate you a little bit more, seeing a bunch of other people in wheelchairs and going through the same?
Yeah. Like to tell you the truth, it really did.
Because you weren't alone.
Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, I was going into a path where it went really, really good, and to change like that, you know. But just seeing other people and hearing their stories on what they do and why they do it really made me think, you know, wow, this is, I can still do it, you know.
Yeah, because you were pretty alone, probably, as far as similar conditions. You were pretty alone at Aurora, right? Like, it was just basically you with the spinal cord injury there, and you found camaraderie and a little bit of inspiration when you started over at Craig. Did they start getting you to do work right away?
Yeah. So, yeah, it was the first week. The second week, that's when they really pushed me into being independent.
What was your favorite part about getting your butt kicked?
I think, you know, just sweating like how I used to, you know, not going to the gym, you know. I'm actually getting something done, you know, I'm actually doing something.
Learning new life skills for sure.
Yeah, you know, because it was just laying like in the bed and or the hospital bed and just doing nothing, you know, every day. And it can get to your head real quick, you know, and it's really hard to get out of that position.
At this point, Armando, as far as transfers, were you a Hoyer transfer or how were you transferring basically?
So at first I was the Hoyer transfer thingy.
Right.
And then after my arm got better, I was like, yeah, fuck that. I want to do transfers on my own.
Right. Curious. Thank you.
Did they have, because when I was there in each room, they had a Hoyer that was connected to the ceiling the with the H-frame and it would kind of follow you everywhere. Did they still have that when you were there?
Yeah, they still had that.
Each room had one of those, like a winch, basically. It was on an H-frame connected to the ceiling, and that's it would come right
lift.
Over the bed.
Yeah, ceiling lift.
Yeah, and every room has that. So that's how they do it. They don't really use
Hoyers.
Hoyers or anything like that.
Yeah.
So they have those guys, and then eventually you step up and they, like the paras, they'll get them to transfer themselves, yeah.
Have you ever installed a ceiling lift?
Actually, I have when I was at Marshall Mobility back in the day. I didn't install it. I kind of was there.
You were just there?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of fun.
Yeah.
Were you, Armando, were you on the, because there's two wings, usually what they do is when you come in first, like they'll put you in the wing where there's you and another patient in the same room. Was that your situation? Or did they move you straight to the other wing where you had your own room?
Also, when I first got there, I had my own room.
Okay.
My own room. And then when I got out of that room, I was into a bigger room. With the couch and everything, and then
Okay, so you were on the other wing first. It's just that you didn't have another person with you. Because back then, unless it's changed, but back then you would start on the wing where I guess there was more care that you needed. So you it was you and another patient, and eventually on the west, I think it was the west wing, you would have your own room, like the one he's saying. It had a couch and everything. It was a really big room.
Armando, at this point, are you in a manual chair?
That's when when my arm was getting better. I was in a.
Was that a tie light you're in?
Yeah, tie light.
Yeah, I think you told me you were in a tie light with a J Fusion cushion, and you had a 10-inch J back. How did that work for you, having that back so low?
Yeah, I mean it was good. I had to control my balance, but it did feel good, you know. Reclining on you or whatever, but it was something like I could like turn and see better, or you know, just move around better.
Right. Significant difference if you're going with the back. I go 10, sometimes 12, depending on the level of function. What about you, Roland?
Yeah. Sounds about right.
So I just don't block that scapula.
Yeah. And it depends. Everybody's going to be a little bit different, but yeah, that you start there for sure.
Yeah.
And then one of the things they used to do also there is, I don't know if they did that with you, Armando, is they used to have them wear like corsets or some sort of like this chest plate to kind of keep your balance. Did you have anything like that, Armando?
I did not like that stuff, man. It was it wasn't my thing for sure. Me and my mom, we would go back and forth. I didn't like it. I didn't want to put it on. And he was just like, oh my gosh, man. That thing
was always weird wearing it for me, but I just did it. So it helped for me. I mean, I'm a higher, so my balance was all over the place. But in your case, you probably didn't need it as much. What were some things there around the hospital that were challenges for you, right? Like, because there's a lot of places to get kind of lost there at Craig Hospital. What was your thing there?
I think, you know, at first, I mean, it was when I first got in the manual wheelchair, you know, I didn't think it was going to be hard pushing myself or stuff like that. And then I came across a ramp and I was like, oh shit, this is different. You know?
Are you talking about the ramp that connects the two buildings?
Yeah, it was. The bridge. It looks small, but
that Jody was talking about. Yeah, it is. It sounds like it, dude.
Yeah. So you couldn't get up at first, Armando?
No, I really couldn't. I mean, it took me a while. I was catching my breath, breathing hard, and I was like, dang.
Yeah. It's funny because Armando's saying it the way it is, because after like our therapy sessions, a lot of the wheelchair users would be together and you would have a break so you can go back to your rooms. And the guys that were stronger could zoom it because the incline wasn't too bad, but it was about maybe I want to say about 30 yards long.
Yeah.
And so going up even a small bit is tough. So all the guys that, you know, all the pairs and stuff, they would fly by there.
Yeah.
And all the quads either had their power chair and there was no problem, or we were just struggling behind. And
right.
And it's one of those things that as time went on, you were like, this is going to be my thing to beat, right? Was that the same for you, Armando?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't. It's just like, it's one of those things where you just kind of, you find these little goals and you just try to get past it and beat it.
Well, touching on that. So how did you overcome it? How did you overcome the bridge, the ramp?
No, I just kept pushing myself, until, I mean, it got easier. You know, I think pain is only temporary, but that, when you reach that goal is, you know, for a good while.
It's one of those things that everyone knew about. So was it?
Yeah.
Not the patients, the nurses knew about it. The PTs, the OTs, they knew that the guys are going to go up there and the girls are going to struggle. So when they're walking up there too, it didn't matter who it was. It didn't have to be a PT or OT. They would just kind of stay there behind you and you're struggling to get up it. And they would just kind of guide you a little bit, push you a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was kind of everyone's job. Everyone kind of would help you.
Give you some of that tough love.
Yeah. And they would just, they saw you struggling and they're just, and it didn't matter. Like I said, it didn't matter who it was. Sometimes even the doctors was like, you got this. They would stop in the middle of their walk and just, you got this. Because
that's awesome.
It was a daily thing. They were just always trying to push you to get past that.
Yeah.
Because that's like it's the first big goal for most people is that bridge, right? Yeah. To get through it. And there's some other ramps there that are beasts, but that's the first one.
The bridge.
Yeah, the bridge.
Armando, I have a quick question. Were you in a relationship at this time when you're at rehab?
Yeah, so I was in a relationship. That girl and myself, we were talking before the accident, but then when I got shot, she was there. Got shot like at the hospital.
Yeah. And how far is Craig from your hometown or where you were living at?
Like 30 minutes.
Oh, okay. Not too bad. So you had frequent visitors while you were there, or occasional visitors?
So I had a lot of visitors at the Rural Medical Center, right. But I didn't tell nobody about Craig. I didn't let nobody know where I was or stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Was that to help you kind of lock into what you wanted to accomplish?
Yeah, that was very, very, to really lock in and just focus on what I got to do.
So what did you do on your free time there at Craig?
My free time, it was, you know, I would go a lot to the garden, and I met a couple people there. You know, they were good people. We would talk, and then just, I know there was an entertainment room that we would go there a lot, just really get some rest. That was my other big thing, is getting some rest.
It sounds like you kept positive for the majority of following your injury. It doesn't sound like you went through, I'm sure you did. If you want to touch on it, that's fine. But it sounds like for the most part, you were, for a very mature 18-year-old, I would have been a lot different than you at 18, because I know myself. And kudos to you, man, for that. But were there any struggles, mental struggles that you had along the way while you were there at Craig?
Yeah, you know, I did come to the point where my discharge was coming up. And, you know, I'm still in the wheelchair. Thought it was going to happen in those time of those months, you know. But it did hit me where, I mean, it's something, it is going to take a process, you know. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not something that's going to just heal within a couple months.
So you did have a couple of ups, a couple of downs.
Of course, man. Yeah, really. Especially on working wise, driving wise. Driving for me was a really big thing. But working wise was like, what am I going to do? You know, it really, really got to me at that time.
Right.
Well, and yesterday on our pre-show call, I got this what you quoted. So you said, if it's my choice if I stay in this position or do I move on? And the hardest part is to take action. I heard from you yesterday. And what did you mean by that?
You know, I think it's just like what I've been learning now. I didn't see it back then, but today in these last couple months, man, it's, you get the opportunities, you know. It's not going to be all the opportunities you like to do, but there are opportunities that's going to get you where you want to.
One of the things I wanted to say is, I think you get given a lot of opportunities there, Craig, to do stuff. Like, did you ever go on any of the trips, Armando, that they offer?
Yeah, I went on, fishing, but I mean, that's the only one I went to.
Okay.
But, you know, hopefully this year I do want to go snowboarding or whatever. Go down the mountain with the snow or whatever and stuff like that. And, you know, skydiving, that is going to be something going to be done before the end of the year. Nice. Just stuff like that.
They give you a lot of different things to do there. Like in those cases, opportunity is one of those big ones, right? You have to take those opportunities. And there's a lot of them there for you, whether it's a trip to go fishing, a trip to go to the zoo like I did, a trip to go to the store that you just didn't think you'd be able to do. My first football game that I ever went to was because of Craig. They took a group of people to the football game, and I got to see the Packers and the Broncos.
Yeah.
So opportunity, I think, is one of the biggest things about places like those, right? where yes, they're going to show you all these really cool things and things to get you ready, right? But you know, to get you, you know, motivated and say, hey, look, these are things that you can do and there shouldn't be anything to stop me.
Right.
Yeah, Armando, so we talked about you getting discharged. So, you know, you're there at Craig, therapy's kicking some ass, you're in a nice wheelchair, you know, specced out for you. When you get home, what's that first night like?
Well, you know, when I got home, it was pretty difficult not being home. I'm not being able to go downstairs like how I used to. Or go upstairs, and it got to me a little bit harder, you know. It was something where I was like, damn, my life really did change, you know. Everything changed.
That's when it hits you the hardest, though. Yeah. Like, you have that first down when you find out what happened to you, and then you have that secondary down where, damn, I'm not being taken care of at the hospital anymore. Like, I'm on my own now.
Wow.
And I don't know what to do. And it, even before, like, he mentioned that he was getting ready to get discharged. Those couple of days, that week, it starts to mess with you mentally because you're not going to have your nurses there with you anymore, your PTs, OTs. You kind of get used to this comfort of everything that needs to be there. Mm-hmm. And now you're going home. And for some people, they come out, right? And then it's just that drop. It's like, dang, I'm at home now. And a lot of people kind of get frustrated again. They start to lose their temper because nothing is the way that it was. And that first week or two, even month, it's tough for a lot of patients. It kind of really hits home. And this is real now, right? I'm at home. And like you said, I can't go upstairs. I can't do this. I can't do that. Because when you're in the hospital, you're not really thinking about those things. You're thinking about what they're making you think about and getting ready.
I wanted to know a little bit, Armando, about your discharge from Craig. And the question that I lead up to that is your wheelchair, did you leave Craig in a loner, or did you already have your prescribed wheelchair and seating system already upon leaving there, the facility?
It was a loner chair. Okay.
How much longer was it before you got your own chair?
It's been, like, it was, took a while. I think it took like a month.
Yeah. Were you pretty involved in like the selection of the equipment and what size it was going to be and the cushion?
Yeah, I was. I was, you know, pretty involved in that because, I mean, it was going to be to go to point A and point B, you know. So I had to make sure everything was right to my fitting.
Right.
And to my
so what did you decide on?
It was on the T-Lite.
The T-Lite, okay.
T-Lite, yeah.
Tell me how the painting of your girlfriend's front grill actually snapped you out of that funk you're in right now. Well, that you were at that time.
Yeah, so I mean, it was something where we had gotten her truck, and you know, she wanted to modify it and make it look good, you know. And I was like, yeah, let's do it, you know. Let's find the parts, and you know, we'll see what we do with the parts, you know. And I decided that night, I was thinking, I was like, you know what, I could paint them, you know. I was thinking about it. I was in my head thinking about it. I was like, you know what, if I put this here and there, and I have this here and over there, you know, I could really do it. So then we found some parts on Facebook Marketplace. At first, we found the grill for my ex. You know, I was like, you know what, I'm going to paint it. You know, let's not take it to nobody, because we're not going to spend all that money just to get a color matched and all that stuff. So then, you know, I told her, just let's go pick it up and I'll paint it. And then the next day, I get the paint, and I'm starting to overthink it, you know. And what I've been learning now throughout these times, you know, is something like, you know, motivation is only a feeling. It's not, you know, you feel, it's like fuel. You know, you run out of motivation when you're overthinking or not thinking the right things or whatever. You know? That's where, you know, the actions really come in to make the progress go in. You know? So then I was just overthinking it. Oh, like, fucking mess up. And it was like, it was just stuff that it didn't make sense. You know, it really did not make sense. And that's why I think about it and I'm like, does it really worth it? But like one of my coaches, he tells me, you know, write in my journal, write my thoughts, you know, because as I now, that really does help me.
Yeah. It was like a pivotal moment for you.
Exactly. Exactly. So then it's something like where I write my thoughts down and I read over it and I'm like, why am I like overthinking about this? You know, I've done this before. This is what I do. This is what my professional is, you know? So I get everything right. I get my paint suit on. I put on the stand. I turn on the compressor and, you know, we're good to go. I start painting. I'm like, okay, cool. It's coming out good. It's coming out good. And then the last coat is the clear coat. And I put the first spray. I mess up. I'm like, oh, fuck. I didn't mess up bad, but I did. I bumped into my chair. I was like, I'm going to take a breath and do it again, you know. And I start spraying again, and it came out really nice. I did that for the grill and the hood.
And how did that change your mindset from that point on, point forward? Because it sounds like it being a pivotal moment, it changed everything for your future. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, I think I thought to myself, I was like, why? You know, if I mess up, I could just do it again. You know, that's, we have, you know, we don't have a lot of time in life, but it gives us time to really learn and learn from our mistakes. That's how I take it. You know, we mess up and I learn from that mistake. Because at the end of the day, you mean, if you're not making any mistakes, in my opinion, I'm not doing any good, you know. Yeah, you know, you got to watch what you're doing too, but it's something where you learn from your mistakes, you know.
And that propelled you for your future as well?
Like, oh, yeah.
Moved you forward.
Yeah, moving forward, you know, it's starting to get my license for real estate and getting out there more. You know, I think something was hard. Like, I mean, yeah, being in a wheelchair at a young age was something very difficult for me. And it was something where I didn't want to really go out. I did, but it was just like when I was getting out the car, I was like, man, they're going to be looking at me getting out, or they're going to be looking at me when I'm pushing myself or stuff like that. You know, that's what really got into my head. But I mean, I did overcome that. It's something where we're all humans.
Yeah.
You know, we're all valid, same, in my opinion, you know.
You bring up a good point, because it's one of those things where, you know, you're coming out of something and it's kind of new again. And you have to figure out, how am I gonna attack this thing that I used to do without even thinking about it, right? And it's a battle that I face every day, and I'm sure Armando still faces to this day, right? There's gonna be things that we just kind of have to figure out. And I think people that are listening need to kind of remember, just because you can't do it the way you used to doesn't mean you can't do it. It's just different, right? And it doesn't, it shouldn't matter how long it takes, right? It's just get it done at your own pace. It's gonna be slower. Right. But it's, you know, a 10-minute mile is still a mile, right? If you run a 10-minute mile, 5-minute mile, it's still a mile, right? So it's one of those things that, you know, it's just, you just change your mindset, like Armando said, and, you know, take a step back. If I mess up, I can do it again, right? Maybe I can't do it as fast as I used to, but I can still do it, right? And I think that's all that matters. Just know you can still do these things, attack it, and go for it.
Well said.
Exactly. So, like, you know, for example, like my coach said, he's a really good friend of mine as well. He told me, you know, sometimes the only disability we have is a broken mindset.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I might have a physical disability, but what really matters is the mindset. You know, what if my mindset is broken, and that's what I have to work on first. You know,
quick question. What were some of the biggest challenges you faced getting your real estate license and actually as a wheelchair user showing homes? Cause I'm sure you show a lot of homes. How do you get yourself around? Is there anybody with you when you're doing that?
So, yeah, I mean, getting my license, I did go in person to study to get my license because, I mean, doing online stuff, I think I really can't really focus on doing that stuff online. But, you know, I got my license and, you know, showing homes were, you know, it was at first pretty difficult, but I usually try to get there as early as possible to be, so when the buyers get there, you know, I'm already inside, ready to go. If there's any steps, I have someone with me to be able to help me and get up those steps.
Are you driving?
I am driving.
Okay, good.
Yeah, tell us about that. I think you did your own modifications.
Yeah, so I literally just got some stuff from eBay, like some hand controls and connecting to my truck, and I was ready to go.
How are your transfers from the wheelchair into the truck?
They're good, you know. I mean, I just pull myself up, I break down my chair, and, you know, just put it to the side of me, and I'm ready to go.
Sounds like you got some pretty good upper body strength and range of motion.
Well, let me ask you this. When you're doing your transfer into your seat, do you slide or do you hop into your seat?
I hop in.
Good. Good answer. Skin shear, buddy. Skin breakdown. Yeah. Okay. So you're getting your real estate license. You're going to in-person class, and then you get a UTI, correct?
Yeah, I did get like a UTI during that time when I was getting my license.
And you had to go to the hospital for a week?
I was in the hospital for a week.
So what led up to that?
I think it was just something like where I wouldn't wash my hands, and then it probably got the UTI and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. But well, some of our listeners are, you know, give them some tips that may cause a UTI they can, you know, tackle on the front end. Do you have any tips?
I think just keeping it clean. You know, it's something where it's very important and not to hold your bladder in, because now I know when I have to pee. You know, I would have to pee like I wouldn't like know when I would have to pee. And I think that's why the other reason I got a UTI, because I wasn't keeping track of time.
How often do you, because you do intermittent catheter, right? So how often do you have to do it a day?
Probably like four times.
Four times? So
yeah.
Spaced out pretty evenly?
Yeah, every six hours, right?
Yeah, depending. Like I said, I know when I got to use the bathroom now. So if I drink a lot of water,
yeah,
it could be.
Yeah, you have it.
As time has gone by, do you feel that you're getting more of that sensation, like you're getting more aware with what your body's going, what's going on with your body?
Yeah. Yeah. It's something where it's, I mean, I know what's happening and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, it's an important thing to learn, right? Get to know your body really well.
What's your typical routine once you get home? Let's say 5 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock, dinner, bathing, all those other ADLs. How do you accomplish all of those? And if you have a little bit of a routine, if you can share that with us a little bit.
Yeah, like from start like morning to night or?
Your whole day. Yeah, your whole day's fine.
So, yeah, I mean, now, I would wake up like around 5, 4:30, depending what day it is, what I got to do and stuff like that. And, you know, I wake up, I meditate. I try to meditate. I'm trying to get better at that. But, and then, you know, I get up, I go to the bathroom, and then that's when I have like a tub, like a big tub of water outside. I usually get in. It's really cold. You know, I really try to control my breathing, because that does help throughout the day when I'm controlling my breathing and stuff like that. I take a shower. I make breakfast. when I get ready for work, I'm usually there till like 9 to 4, 3, just depending what I got, if I got any showings or any listing appointments or stuff like that, you know. And then, you know, I come home, I work a little bit more from if I have to, you know. If not, I just chill, I read a book, I make dinner, and then I take another shower. After I take the shower, you know, I'm getting ready to go to bed. I read my Bible, and yeah, you just watch TV.
Yeah, and you're accomplishing all these things independently, right?
Yeah, everything's independently.
All your transfers into the shower chair, you use a
transfer bench.
The bench thing.
Rhonda, how much does meditation play a role for you?
I started doing meditation probably like 3 weeks ago, but I mean, if you take it seriously, it does. Well, to me, it brought a big impact in my life.
Talk about it.
Because it realized I'm putting all this. Back then, it was just like, I don't deserve this, you know. Maybe I'll do this later on or stuff like that, you know. But, you know, if it's meant to be, it's up to me, you know. And that's how I keep it at the end of the day. If it's meant to be, it's up to me.
I like that.
I was going to ask you, I was interested about something you said earlier. You said you get in a tub before you shower. Like, is that cold water, warm water? What's going on there with that one?
So I keep that outside. It's filled with, in the night it gets cold. So it's pretty cold when I get in. And what I do is just, you know, when you touch cold water, you're breathing fast and you're like, what that really taught me is really controlling my breathing. You know, controlling the mind, telling the mind that it's not cold.
Oh, okay.
You know, once, and it's crazy because, you know, it's like you get in the water, you're like, fuck, it's fucking cold.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. But when you really think about it, when you really, in your head, you're really just thinking, have a clear mind, and you tell yourself, it's not cold. You control your breathing, control everything else, and it's beauty.
It's interesting. How does it affect your spasms? Because me, cold, if I get splashed with cold water, even though I can't really feel the cold, do you find that your body kind of at first kind of spazzes and then you kind of control it with some breathing and calming down a bit? Or
I I usually just put my legs in first, kind of like, oh yeah, I can't really feel it. But this, where the point where like almost where my hip is at, that's when I start feeling it.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Where my hip flexes are at. Okay. My hip flexes and where my calf is at.
Okay. Okay.
And you know, they're moving around and stuff like that. But when I actually get my whole body in and just breathe, you know, control my breathing, have that clear mind, tell myself it's not cold.
Yep.
It start to calm down. I'm in there for like maybe 3 minutes, you know, 3 minutes and a half is the max, you know. I'm not in there for like a long time, but
I was imagining you were in there for a while, dude. So.
Nah.
So I have a final question for you, Armando. Your heart's stopped for 12 minutes and you came back and rebuilt your life piece by piece. When you look back at everything that you've overcome, what do you think kept your heart beating, man? And what keeps it beating today? And also, what does the future hold for you, man? Are you getting married? Are you in a relationship currently? Let us know.
Yes. I mean, throughout these times, you know, I've been through a lot. You know, this year has probably been one of my toughest years, you know.
Yeah.
I lost the girl I was talking to or like dating back in April. I lost my job in July. And, you know, it was just things where I thought it was, you know, not going to stop.
Right.
But, you know, I think those things happen for a reason, you know.
Absolutely.
Those things happen to open another door. You know, now I'm doing what I love more. As a job wise, you know, I'm not going to a job and saying, fuck, you know,
yeah,
gotta do this again over and over. In real estate, you know, it's amazing, you know. One day I'm happy and the other day I'm like, fuck, you know, but it's just that mindset where you know it's good. You like
you're
that.
Keeping it in perspective for sure.
Exactly. It's not the same thing over and over. You have different feelings, you find different emotions, you know. That's what really got me is doing the things I didn't like really made my emotions come out more, you know. And then, yeah, like losing that girl was, it was, you know, pretty difficult. But that made me understand myself more and love myself more, you know. And I think, you know, being in a wheelchair is not, you know, I mean, how can I put it? Like, there's, you could still go out and have fun. You know, it's not something where you're in a wheelchair and your life is over. You're not going to have a social life or whatever, you know. But I think it's just the mindset. You got to have that mindset where you got to look good. You got to feel good. You got to smell good. You got to take care of yourself, you know, because at the end of the day, that's what really going to catch people's attention, you know. Oh, why are you in a wheelchair? You know, why? Like, you're looking so good and stuff like that, you know. And that's something where can really get people's attention and stuff like that. And you get to meet new people. And that's where new opportunities come in and stuff like that, you know.
You're one of the most mature young men I've ever had the pleasure of talking to, man. And I wish you the very, very best in everything you do, and the best of luck, man.
I got one real quick thing for you. Hey, do you have any advice, dating advice for Danny?
Dude.
Come on, dude.
Danny, I do.
I'm trying to hook you up.
I mean, dude, like, it's we're all humans, you know. If it's the right person, you know, it's gonna come out, bro.
Yeah,
you know, it's not. Yeah, you maybe want this girl, but if she's not willing to, you know, help you get out your wheelchair, or, you know, just hang out with you, being seen in a wheelchair, that does. I mean, it's not meant for you, you know, and that's. That's the only way I could put it. It's just telling you the truth, man. Because, I want to all this stuff, like, oh, yeah, you know, let's hang out or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's really up on both of us, you know? Because I know they're going to have to get on my wheelchair or stuff like that, you know? I know that I have to be pushing myself and they're going to feel bad. Or, oh, you need help going up the hill or whatever, you know? And it's good to have that help, you know? But I think, you know, we're all humans. We're not like different. If people think we're different, then that's really mentality different, you know, like that's
for right. It's on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And all that goes with your mindset, so for sure.
And there's so many good people out there too, man. Yeah. Really good.
So what are your top pickup lines?
What's up?
Are you asking me?
No, I'm asking Armando. I'm asking Armando to help you.
So what are your top pickup lines?
I immediately went dirty. What the hell? That's probably why I'm single.
Yeah, that's funny.
So long as I have a face, you'll always have a place to sit? No?
Ooh. There you go. There you go.
I did not see that one coming, dude.
Hey, you got to grow a gray beard, though.
We always have good parking. We usually get to the front of the line. Like, yeah. These are our pluses.
Whatever.
Nice.
Wait, I don't know.
We're going to go down to Ignite right now, brother.
Yeah. So, like, when me and my ex went to, we went to Disneyland. Gee, we were cutting all the fucking lines, man. We were from there. I was like, that's like something that I do take advantage of, you know.
Hey, you ought to get on, if Matt Rife is ever on in your area.
Oh, my gosh. You should go check that guy out.
Because he F's with everybody in a wheelchair in the room, dude.
Yeah.
He's got to look him up. But
he is something special, man. He's hilarious.
Damn.
He holds nothing back on wheelchair people. He would absolutely kill Danny.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I'd hook him up too.
Yeah. He'd make it happen.
Okay, Armando, thank you for joining us on this episode. It was really good. It was a great conversation. And, you know, you're welcome to come back on the show anytime. So do you want to give out any information, any type of plugs for your real estate or your social media?
Yeah, if you guys want to follow me on Instagram at Mando_period21, that's MANDO_period21. And I just started a TikTok where I'm doing like point of views, a day of a life as a realtor in a wheelchair and stuff like that. And for that account, it's going to be Mondo_303.
Nice.
I'll hit you up tonight on TikTok for sure, dude.
Yeah. I just posted another video of like me getting in the car or like the truck and stuff like that. You
know? I don't use my name for a lot of reasons on TikTok. It's nothing horrible like against the law or anything like that. It's just funny and dark and whatever, right? But I'll hit you up. I've got a nickname. And I used to do jiu-jitsu, and so it was a nickname that was given to me, so I kind of ran with it. But I'll message you to let you know it's me, Roland.
All right, cool.
All right, man. All
right.
Thank you guys for this opportunity.
You are an impressive young man.
I know. Yeah. He's 23.
I mean, you got hurt right after high school.
I'm 21.
You do. My hat's off to you, bro. You keep doing you and kick ass. 90,000. Inspire 000. Some people, man.
90,000 bucks at 18. Dude, I was making like $3 an hour at that age.
Well, Armando, we're proud of you. So you want to come back on? You got our email and stuff. And well, you have my cell number, so you can always call or text me.
All right, cool, man. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Yeah.
We're pulling for you, brother.
Yeah, brother.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye-bye.